Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us again on another Sunday morning. Today we're going to be talking about solar power, benefits, some challenges, and we've invited our guest Chris Meyer to be with us today. He's the executive director at the Local Energy Alliance Program, or LEAP. Chris, hey, thanks for joining in.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me to join you this morning.
I didn't know who else to ask. We got Chris Meyer, decade at the Environmental Defense Fund, developing strategies for climate and forest policy. Draws on many years of inclusive climate policy to lead LEAP's energy efficiency and renewable programs, and as a critical part of climate solutions. Chris holds an MA in International Relations, Social Change, and Development from Johns Hopkins University. Of course, Chris, we asked you, after all that work you put in, I think a lot of people ask LEAP, Local Energy Alliance Program. I didn't know anything about that. What is that? That's in Charlottesville. So before we start talking about the specific benefits and a few challenges of solar power, can you tell everybody what LEAP is and why it's here?
Yeah, of course, Rick. And I had similar questions when I had first heard about the executive director job and at this organization, and I hadn't really heard about it, even though having lived in Charlottesville for a couple of years and again, being in, you might say, having worked in the climate space. The Local Energy Alliance Program was actually created both by the government of Albemarle County and the city of Charlottesville back in 2009 to take advantage of the American Recovery Act funds that were being made available to weatherize homes and then also occurring kind of as a jobs creation program during the Great Recession. And so it was stood up basically as a nonprofit, again, by those two government entities and was successful in channeling, I think it was around $3 million a year for a number of years. And that then turned off, though, after a couple of years, and LEAP then evolved into doing not only just weatherization work, but for more market rate folks, but also then starting to implement programs for utilities like Dominion, Charlottesville Gas, Washington Gas, and also throughout the whole state. It wasn't just in the greater Charlottesville area, but then started assisting other areas, mostly in Northern Virginia. In that time period, too, it evolved to start to do some work on promoting rooftop solar on residential buildings and some commercial buildings. And most recently, and kind of after I've started 2 years ago, we've been really focused on kind of expanding and looking at our low-income work and how we can we help kind of a lot of those low-income residents in the community who have high energy burdens, reduce their energy bills through, you know, again, our weatherization or energy efficiency work, and kind of expanded LEAP's, you might say, up the value chain also by not just doing a lot of home energy audits. And we used to kind of be at that point and do a lot of project management, but now we actually also do a lot of work delivering of trucks and crews that go out and insulate homes and air seal homes also. So it's evolved since the kind of it, as all organizations do since a couple of years ago. But I think, you know, playing a really key role in the community and helping climate change mitigation and implementation of climate action plans, definitely for the County of Albemarle, but also in the city of Charlottesville. But also looking at solar and renewable energy, and there's some very, I think, interesting things on the horizon for us that we're excited about.
So you can find out more about LEAP if you're listening. LEAP, that's LEAP-VA.org. So, Chris, let's just start. How has sort of the popular view, the cultural view of solar power changed over the last few decades? Because you certainly hear the phrase out in society more often.
Yeah, I think, you know, the kind of real first big push into solar power, if my understanding correctly, is, you know, Jimmy Carter during the oil embargoes and kind of like, oh, no, we need to figure out how to produce our own energy somehow. I think, you know, it goes back to him putting in some of the initial solar panels up on the White House. It, you know, I think got a big boost then, and unfortunately, you know, lost interest as waned, you might say, and only until, I think, about 10 or 15 years ago, before climate change, I think, became, you know, was becoming a bigger issue, was then kind of a resurgence and people came back and took a bigger look at, okay, how do we make this work? And not only, I would say, at for individuals and kind of, again, going from a niche product to becoming trying more mainstream for individuals and residents and homes, to also kind of utility scale, we might say, big projects where there's thousands of or hundreds of thousands of solar panels that are at one spot in what you call kind of main generation that would be utility scale and then contribute to the grid and be able to power hundreds and thousands of homes. So those things, I would almost say almost kind of, again, you might say residential solar and the utility scale have moved in parallel to where now you're seeing they're becoming more mainstream, accepted, that economies kind of make sense. They're cost competitive in most markets and most things that they do now without a lot of subsidies. And I think in general, like you see, you drive down a lot of streets in Charlottesville, you'll see most blocks have at least one house that maybe has solar panels on them. It might not be on the front street facing part of the house, but on the backside. So it's definitely, I think, made a lot of progress and acceptance and again, more mainstream. And to a lot of points too, I just say it's not really political. Both Republicans, you might say, and Democrats are, you know, pretty much a lot of the time behind it and support it.
So let me step out from behind the shadows on this topic and say that my house has 16 solar panels on it, but we didn't put them there. We moved into a house that already had these solar panels, and we've learned a few things from it, and we've found ourselves still in ignorance of a lot about it. So this topic, I hope, teaches me, along with other listeners, as we go along. So let's stay residential for a bit, because certainly a lot of the conversation would change, at least in terms of how it, maybe not the basic function of how solar power works, but there are key other parts of the topic that change between residential and commercial, correct?
Yeah. You know, there's, you almost you can say residential, commercial, and utility scale stuff. I would kind of bucket at that. And you have commercial buildings, which a number of different commercial buildings in the city of Charlottesville and Illinois County have, where you're seeing dozens, you might say, bigger size systems, right? But then in residential, right, your 16 panels like you have in your house is, you know, probably an average size system. And that's, you know, accessible for a lot of folks. And then the utility scale is, right, there's a whole kind of different set of economics and challenges, obviously, with that people are working through at the moment, you might say. I would say that's kind of, you know, a good way to look at it.
Again, we are talking about solar power and the benefits and some challenges that go along with that. Chris Meyer, he's the executive director of LEAP, the Local Energy Alliance Program. So, Chris, again, this house, 16 solar panels, we did not install them. How easily are the solar panels damaged? We're It's not infrequent for there to be calls for possible hail.
Yeah, no, your solar panels actually, they're designed to be hail resistant. They're very durable. It's very infrequent that a weather event or something like that might damage them. Sometimes squirrels will chew on wiring, and that can cause an issue. Or there's a minor defect, you might say, in somehow the circuitry or something like that that comes. But they all normally come with the panels themselves with 20 to 25 year warranties. And there's a little deterioration in their ability to every year to kind of how much production they can do. I think it's about 1% a year might be reduced each year. And that's normal and understood. But if there is, you know, for some reason, and they'll track this, you can see this at almost like 15-minute intervals. And I don't know, Rick, if you have this on your own system. I have a system at home too. And, you know, I can see in 30-minute intervals on an app on my phone if the panels are all working or not, basically, and producing like they should, you know, when it's sunny or not or whatnot. So the technology is very robust, I will just say that. And again, there are kind of, when they install them, if there are, and the warranties associated with them, if a panel for whatever reason breaks, because obviously there are an occasional kind of failures in them, the solar company will come out and replace it for you. And there's ways, again, to kind of know if that's happening or not, and that you can have basically in the palm of your hand, too, through these apps. So it's a very robust technology.
A lot of people plan on putting their solar panels on, aside from any ecological benefits that they may be giving to the world, for the hope of reducing their electrical bill. Would you agree with that?
That, you know, the reduction of your electrical bill is right. There's your payback on the economics of it. So, I mean, Rick, I mean, what's your electrical bill in August when you're running kind of your heat?
Well,
or your
and this,
at peak.
And this is where I think when we moved in, and where I think for the conversation with today's listeners, that there are what I not so quickly discovered is that there are really two ways, at least, to run your solar panels. You can connect them to the grid and reduce your electrical bill. But then, if I'm not mistaken, when that happens, if the power in your neighborhood goes out, so does your power. Or
that's correct.
You can have a bunch of batteries, and if the power in your neighborhood goes out, you still have power in your house.
So that kind of situation you described, the former, you might say, used to be correct. That was basically the only option you have. And then what they call that is net metering. And so when your solar panels are generating a lot of power, it gets used by your own home first, but then if it's generating excess power, like you might be doing at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when you're away from the house at work, and not using a lot of power, all that goes to the grid. And then the electric company basically has like a running your meter account, and that adds credits to basically your bill. And at least in my case, in my household, we're basically net zero, but I generate a lot more credits during the summer months, especially during the spring and fall when the temperatures don't require a lot of home heating, because we use electric, we have a geothermal system, we use electric heating and cooling for spaces, our homes. Basically, right, you're able to generate a lot more. And then when in the winter months, or you might say in August, in the high air conditioning season, when you're using a lot of heating and cooling, and your solar can't keep up, especially in the winter months, there's less solar potential. Basically, then you dip into those credits, because you're consuming more from the grid. Now, obviously, if your production is not enough to cover everything, then you're paying the utility, which I think sounds like Rick's what happens in your case. What new technology just come out though, right? Is you hear about Tesla and their battery walls, their power walls, and there's other battery systems out there that will now allow you to not only do the net metering, but because in that case is right, the power companies, if they want to go fix the power pole because there's a storm or whatnot, they don't want. They would automatically switch off the solar power because they don't want that solar power being sent to the grid and potentially electrify someone who was fixing the wire, right? Now, in the case of the batteries, though, what will happen now is you'll have different switches, basically, you might say, on your home that which will can take and switch off your connection to the grid and then be able to draw that power back into your home and utilize it like you would having your own kind of generator, you might say, emergency generator on the side, except it's just the batteries, right? And then the solar panels would actually start refilling those batteries, though, during the day, et cetera, you know, constantly if, you know, for whatever reason, the power went out for multiple days. So you do have that capability now. And those batteries, though, are not necessarily cheap. They're usually about, I think we were getting them for about $14,000 installed per 10 kilowatt hours. And 10 kilowatt hours would probably basically be able to run your refrigerator, lights, and some computers, but not necessarily your heating and cooling systems, pretty much for a day in most kind of 2,000 square foot, you know, four bedroom, three bedroom houses situations, and maybe some water heating too. And then if you were having sun that day, your batteries would fill up again and you'd have more power. And you could also double the battery pack size, stuff like that. So that what you explained, Rick, there is kind of, it's, again, in the past, in like my house, I don't have batteries. So, right, we lose the power. And unfortunately, even if the sun's shining and the power's out, I'm out of luck. I'm not getting any, I can't turn, my refrigerator's not getting power or anything like that. You know, but now it is the case, if you were to be able to invest in batteries and you can afford that, you can basically still take advantage of your solar panels and be generating electricity and kind of basically be off grid if you want to.
So you can do both, because I was only aware of an either or situation. You either had batteries and sort of ran the survivalist method, or you could be tapped into the grid, but then you couldn't have power if the neighborhood lost power.
No, my understanding is that they're now kind of, they fixed, you might say, the plumbing of the electric switches so that you could have power when you could still be net metering, you know, and send power to the grid when the grid's up. But if the grid turns off, then you would be able to, again, just switch everything and be able to go to your batteries and switch yourself off from the grid. They have that technology.
That's great. Right. What another good reason for people to consider solar power?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw, unfortunately, like Texas made people, a lot of people think about that. What happened in Texas when the storm came and, people lost power. Unfortunately, people died because, they couldn't heat or cool their houses. Heat their houses. Rather than spending $10,000 on a diesel generator, as for emergency backup power, people are making these investments in these batteries. And this is not just, for residentials, but these are what people are doing also for big hospitals and community centers, et cetera, are having that type of, and it's not necessarily always linked to solar either. They could just be linked to the grid and then they filled up and then, they'll only be able to power, a day's worth of emergency power and et cetera. And sometimes they have both. It's a very interesting thing. There's also what we're seeing, and I think exciting kind of technology on the future, and something that Dominion just launched for those of us in newer Dominion customers, is what's called time of use.
Chris Meyer here, executive director of the Local Energy Alliance program, as we talk about solar power. So let's do that. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. Hang tight. All right, solar power. That's what's driving us today. We talk with Chris Meyer from LEAP. Chris, you mentioned the incident in Texas over the winter. Do you think that incidents like that popularized the viewpoint of solar power? Is one incident like that enough to do it? Tell me more.
Yeah, I think that definitely put the idea out, and I think in more people's minds, and especially, you know, being able to have a little more control in a world that is a little bit more inconsistent, especially with major weather events, you know, whether it be that polar vortex freeze that happened down there, you might say, or hurricanes in our cases, you know, up on the eastern seaboard. I also see a lot of this being adopted over in California because of all their wildfires and the power outages or forced power outages that are over there. That's really a pioneering space out there where a lot of people are installing solar. We're doing so anyway, just because power is expensive over there, but then adding batteries as, you know, for the ability to back up because they've had their power cut off, you know, multiple times in the last couple of years and for multiple days, you know, so they, you know, they're tired of losing all the refrigerator full of food, you know, in addition to, you know, wanting to have some stability, and especially for people with medical conditions. So I think, again, Texas was a wake-up call for that part of the state, definitely. There's bigger energy kind of policy and grid issues that were, I think, a much bigger issue there. But for a lot of people, you know, who are concerned about this and kind of maybe seeing this uncertainty of a lot more this type of power outages in the future, I think, you know, they're building those solar, you know, as a way to kind of ensure their own energy security for their own house and their own family.
So as far as infrastructure goes, and with that, whether it's you already mentioned the cost of a battery. I believe you said $14,000 if you wanted to have a battery in the house rather than just being completely attached to the grid. But there's also other parts. There's larger parts of an infrastructure, correct? And I don't mean the panels. I'm talking about community-wide, statewide, country-wide. Is our infrastructure ready for a fairly quick turnover from fossil fuel to renewable energy?
Yes, that's a big question there, Rick. I think there's a lot of concern, you know, from people who say, right, we need to make sure we have coal-fired power plants and natural gas, kind of fossil fuel power plants that are always able to kind of turn on right away. Because the winds the wind stops blowing sometimes, and so your wind farms, you can't, you know, always depend on them. The same thing for the solar panels. You can't always depend on them. But the broader grid, you know, and the Virginia's grid, we would not necessarily have that problem we have in Texas. You saw in Texas because the grid that we participate in, the grid is, you know, multiple different power plants coming from different areas. And we get power, you know, comes into our grid, and that's managed, at least in transmissions, managed by Dominion and the greater Charlottesville area. Most of the transmissions, managed, sorry, by them. But there's power coming from Maryland. There's power coming from West Virginia and Tennessee and other areas. And there's different providers that are providing that power. There is natural gas. There's nuclear power from, you know, near Lake Anna. There is, but also solar power and wind energy. And there are kind of master level kind of, I would say, the power gods, you might say, that are constantly kind of adjusting and looking at it and asking for and bringing in new power from different places. And all those power sources, to a certain extent, are bidding to participate, you know, and offer that power. And so it's a complex system, and it's evolving. I think they're trying to build more resilience into it in the sense of, and there's a lot of planning that happens, and that's regulated, and the regulators are always keeping an eye on that. And Dominion has to issue 10-year plans and think about and tell them, like, okay, this is where we're getting our power from. Is it a lot of coal-fired power plants, or is it natural gas power plants, or are we going to retire those and we're going to get offshore wind, which is a big thing that just was promoted and Dominion's going to do now, which is great. Or is it going to be more solar power plants? And how much maybe are we going to be able to depend on rooftop solar systems, small ones, like when you have on your Rick house or when I have on my house? You know, what is, how does that all fit all work? How do we utilize batteries, not only small batteries in individual houses that potentially we can call on, even if there's not a storm, that would send power to the grid in the middle of the day from your own home? So Rick, all of a sudden, like if you had a couple batteries, you could sell power actually from yourself to the grid, but then fill that up in the middle of the night when power is cheaper, but divided and provided to the system. How do electric vehicles fit into all of this also? And not only like them charging and needing to take power off the grid, just because you're electrifying it. And again, this is a fuel source that's coming from electricity and potentially renewable energy, not gasoline. And so, yeah, the, and this is a kind of a constantly evolving challenge. The sector itself is conservative just because, you know, Dominion will always say is our goal, is job is always to make sure you have power. There's people's health and safety that are based on this, right? I mean, they might die if their machine turns off at home, their, you know, respirator or something like that, that is, you know, using that. So they're very conservative about making changes to it and while ensuring reliability. And I think we're on the right path here in Virginia. You know, it's evolving quickly, which I think is good regarding kind of our fuel mixes, as they say, and kind of where we're getting our power from, whether it be coal-fired power plants, nuclear, natural gas, renewables like solar or wind, and also kind of what is the role that, you know, residentials and their own rooftops play in all that. But we have to evolve because of climate change and other things. And so I'm not too worried about it. I think, real quick, just at times, you know, the people who are obviously who own the coal-fired power plants or jobs or, you know, on that will obviously make an argument, and sometimes I think play up kind of the grid resiliency and kind of, hey, you know what, you're going to get Texas unless, you know, we maintain these old coal-fired power plants or whatnot, even though they're a huge, you know, problems associated with those, whether it be from health or climate change. So, sorry, that was kind of a long answer, Rick, but I'll just say, you know, unfortunately, it is a complex ecosystem. There's a lot of different pieces, you know, and when you shift one, it shifts the other, but I think we're evolving in a way that is going to ensure people are still have power, but have a cleaner grid that looks at climate change and reflects the need to address that.
Fair enough. Chris Meyer with us today. He's the executive director at LEAP. That's the Local Energy Alliance program, as we talk about solar power. So, Chris, walk me through this. I'll start with this question, and then I'm going to have a couple follow-ups. But I have my home. We'll just go with 2,500 square feet. Two adults, 2.5 kids who were doing, and so everybody's got, has the need to run their computer from home, either from work, for work, for school. You can't count on the kids going back to school. And so there may be need for 4.5 computers running at the same time. There's a couple refrigerators full. There's multiple televisions. So I need this power. And there's an HVAC system. I'm going to put 16 panels up, and I want to have a couple batteries because my family wants power when the lights go out. What is this going to cost me?
Well, so, all right, 16 panels. It looks like it's probably going to be about a five kilowatt system, or about 5,000 watt system. Okay. I think that the scenario you just painted there, your household is going to consume probably 1,000 to 1,200 kilowatts a month. Okay? So multiply that by 12. You know, it's different maybe in the summer and winter, but let's call it 14,000 kilowatt hours a year. Okay? Your 5-kilowatt system is probably going to produce about 6,000 kilowatt hours over that year. That'd be a good, you know, especially if it had a good southern-facing roof, okay, and really could capture that. So your solar system that you put on your roof is only actually going to cover about maybe 45, max 50% of your actual consumption, okay? So while your power bill is probably, again, $1,600 a year, that solar system is going to cut that, again, maybe in half in some of your consumption. That 5-kilowatt system is going to be priced at about $12,000, $13,000, I think. It kind of depends on the bells and whistles. Just for the solar panels and the equipment needed to run all that, you will get your income tax credit. So the federal government's going to credit you 26%, which is great. They're subsidizing it for you. So you get $2,500. You're out of pocket is around $10,000, you know, $11,000, let's say. Okay. Just for the solar panels. And that's going to, again, have your, or, you know, again, reduce your average monthly bill by 40 to 50%. Okay. Now you could add batteries to this, and if it's they're connected to the solar system, like the solar panel system, like we talked about, you know, again, because you want power in case it goes out, and you get two 10-watt batteries, you get the two Tesla Powerwall batteries, maybe, or I think they actually come in 14 kilowatts. Anyway, so you're looking about $25,000-$30,000 for the batteries for
each,
let's say, 20 watts of batteries. No, total.
Total. Okay.
So then, this in this situation, sorry, again, you get your tax credit off of that, okay? So you're getting, $7,000, that's $20,000. So your whole system there for 20 kilowatts, your batteries and your solar power, that's reducing your monthly bill by 50%, and your 20 kilowatt of batteries, which would basically run, I think, that situation which you talked about, you know, with a couple of refrigerators running, some HVAC, not, let's say, in the middle of winter or the peak August. You know, you could do that for a day on those 20 kilowatts. You might have to take a couple of things off, but you can still pretty much live your normal life. That's going to cost you, pre-tax credit, what was that? About $42,000, and then, you know, after the tax credit, about, again, 25% off of that, so $31,000,
$32,000. Yeah, take another 10 off.
All right, so that, and again, is gets you that resiliency you want, but also, again, lowers your monthly consumption in general. Again, there's going to be nuances around that, but and that you can finance that, you know, through a local bank, so you can spread it out, you know, just while you're saving money on your energy to pay for that. Usually your payback period, you know, is kind of when you break even, is about 10 years here in the state of Virginia when you consider the income tax credit, because we don't have a lot of other subsidies, and kind of we're not in California where it's always sunny, or Arizona where it's always sunny, and that's kind of your average system usually is about a 10-year payback period. Batteries, again, are kind of that resiliency piece, and their payback period is there's not one at the moment,
right?
Really. So that's just something extra there. I will say real quick, Rick, you know, what we always do at Leap, and we always tell our Solarize customers, is that the cheapest thing to do first before you put the solar panels on is to do energy efficiency. So you always want to make sure, you know, one, you've changed out your incandescent light bulbs for LEDs. You've got an HVAC tune-up. You've been changing out your air filters for your HVAC system. You definitely have the right amount of insulation. And we've air sealed so that, because the most energy you usually consume for your house is for heating and cooling your spaces. Okay. That's why the attic insulation and kind of air sealing is the most important thing. Lighting, I think, well, your home appliances, so your refrigerators, your load, for your computers, TVs, other things are kind of the next biggest thing, your washers and dryers, your clothes washer, your dishwasher, then lighting, and then, sorry, maybe your computers and your loads from your computers and charging your cell phones and other, like, small appliances. And so those are all things to kind of look at and, like, first, like, hey, can you reduce that? Before you also then try to size an appropriate solar system. And because that's also a lot cheaper to do most of those things rather than, again, put solar panels on your roof.
So you mentioned that, and I don't want to get too into the weeds on it, but you mentioned that by the time you do this general theory of numbers that you and I exchanged, that it's 10 years before the tax pays off the expense. But what does it do for return of investment on the house? I mean, is it going to increase the value of my house if I decide to sell it? Is it going to impact the property value in my neighborhood? What does it do there?
That's a great question. And sorry if I wasn't clear on this before, but the savings on your energy bill, basically, it takes 10 years from savings on your energy bill to pay for the system, you might say. Okay. After that tax credit. But what you've basically done when you put a solar, you know, again, you've created a little power plant on your roof, right? That is generating electricity, which is valued at 11.5 cents a kilowatt hour, right? So what it is doing is basically increasing the value of your house, and you have that value when you will potentially sell it, and the inspectors and the adjusters will take that into consideration. So it's definitely a value add.
All right, Chris Meyer here today with us. Let's take our second break. We'll come back, and I want to learn more about options at Leap and some of the things that they do. And I want to know what climate change has done for solar power. Hang tight, everybody. And thanks for joining us again. Sunday morning wake-up call here on a Sunday as we learn about the benefits and a few challenges of solar power. Chris Meyer here with us, Executive Director of Charlottesville LEAP, Local Energy Alliance Program, LEAP-VA.org. Chris, climate change always seems to be associated in some way with solar power. Do you think, you know, has climate change sped up the interest in solar power? I mean, is that a silly question?
No. I would just say real quick, I mean, there are reasons to do solar power and put solar, you know, solar system on your roof just for the economics of it and kind of the self-control of your own access to power and not having to rely on the grid. You know, setting aside, you might say, the climate change benefits. Getting to those climate change benefits, though, you know, there's a recognition, you know, multiple science analysis of all this, and you know, I think it's well understood that, you know, we do need to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, and the power sector, the energy sector, you know, is one of the biggest sources of that, from burning coal or natural gas to, you know, again, create that that electricity. So the ability to have renewable sources that, you know, again, create electricity for us and generate electricity for us that doesn't require greenhouse gas emissions is important, you know, and is part of the solution to solving our climate change challenge. And thus, you know, there's been a lot more interest in subsidies and recognition of that. And that's why I see, you think, a lot of progress and a lot of promotion of it.
So let's talk about LEAP as its own organization, because at the beginning of the hour, you mentioned LEAP providing assessments and weatherization. do I just call Leap up and say, hey, can somebody come out here and do an energy assessment for me?
It is simple as that, Rick. You can give our phone a call. We also online basically have a form, quick form you can fill out, and then our client coordinator will find a time that works for you. We send an auditor out, and it's about a two-hour analysis. We're, again, it's subsidized from the power company and from at least in the city and the county. And basically, we do them for market rate folks for $45. And we go through and take a look at your house, try to find where we can do some energy savings. We do safety checks on your HVAC equipment, and especially if you have gas, making sure there's no gas leakage. We find a lot of gas leaks, unfortunately, in people's houses. So there's that component of it. We do moisture and kind of checks also to make sure you're not getting a lot of excess moisture in the house that can lead to mold. So there's a lot of benefits from our report. You get a report at the end of it. And with some actionable steps. And then we also, if you would qualify for different kind of rebates or programs that, again, would help reduce the cost of taking those actions, we make sure you're aware of those and or can help you, implement those or get access to those. That analysis doesn't take a look at your house, though, and check if your roof would be good for solar. That's a separate program we have, and that program is called Solarize, and you can sign up for that too. But then we start you on a different track that, again, does an analysis for if your house would be great for solar. And if it is, we let you know and we connect you with an installation partner that we vetted, negotiated kind of a wholesale price on, and then they start working with you and, and customize the system to meet your unique needs.
Leap has also worked with other organizations in Charlottesville, is that correct? I looked up something on the website, the Housing Voucher Energy Efficiency Pilot.
That is one pilot, right, that we launched with partners from the Community Climate Collaborative, or Charlottesville Climate Collaborative, as it used to be known. That helps folks who have rental properties and particularly either would like to or want to or have a need. Sorry, first let's start with this. Have a need to replace some HVAC equipment or need insulation in their rental unit to make some upgrades to it along the lines of, again, of HVAC or kind of energy efficiency. We don't do just general rehab. And in exchange for making those improvements and ensuring that their renter can and enjoy kind of lower utility bills, they need to, though, be able to offer basically the rental unit to a low-income person that meets certain income qualifications and or is on a list with the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority. They maintain a list of folks who are looking for low-income apartments and rents and have vouchers to help pay for those. And that way, again, it's trying to basically, I can help you out improve your rental property, but at the same time, kind of for that benefit that you're getting, you need to commit to renting your property to a low-income person for a certain amount of years. There's that collaboration. We also collaborate with Habitat for Humanity and their Southwood Mobile Home Park and helping a lot of their mobile home park residents. We've provided a lot of weatherization services to Piedmont Housing Alliance, who manages a number of low-income housing units and properties in town also. We collaborate with a lot of different agencies and other nonprofits in the community.
So when I drive by what I would have thought of as a cow field out in Albemarle or one of the nearby counties, and see it full of solar panels, is that somehow tied into LEAP?
Not at this time, but we hope to be involved in that type of project in the future. The state legislator legislated recently what we call community solar or shared solar, and that would be where kind of a big utility scale project, like you just mentioned, basically would be generating power but that would allow community members to subscribe to it directly. So basically, instead of, unfortunately, if your roof, whatever, doesn't work or you can't afford to put solar panels on your roof, you could actually subscribe to that big project, though, and say, okay, I want 500 kilowatt hours a month or something like that, or 5,000 kilowatt hours worth of electricity from that a year. And you would then basically receive kind of credit for that, a portion of the production from that solar system or that community solar project. And where LEAP would come in and all of that is, well, we're not going to be the ones engineering and designing and building that that project out there, but we would be what we call the subscriber platform, where we would manage kind of the signing up of you and the customer interface and telling you how many credits you got a month, and basically connecting that project to the individuals who want to and need to and can and need that power, wanted to participate in that power. You would still get billed for that power. You still have to pay for it. And for the low-income folks, it'd probably be actually a lower rate. The cost would be less than what they currently pay from Dominion. It has to be a Dominion customer. But for some of the market rate people, it might be 10% more. It would be the cost. But LEAP would basically manage all that accounting. But you would, and we would tell Dominion basically how much to credit on your bill and how much to reduce your bill for. So that's how LEAP would basically end up participating and engaging in a project like that. You see.
Chris Meyer here. He's the executive director of LEAP, which is the Local Energy Alliance program, as we talk about solar power. I've seen a floating solar farm, and I read about noise barriers on some roads, highways, interstates that were being put up with solar panels as the noise barrier. I thought that both of those things are pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, I think there's, you know, people are experimenting with a lot of different ways to deploy solar power. That would be pretty cool. I've seen streets made out of solar panels. floating solar powers on lakes. I think there's a lot of interesting, you might say, innovation happening where people are testing and trying different things, again, to generate this kind of renewable energy that we need. I couldn't tell you exactly, you know, the economics of a lot of these are, you know, aren't going to work out, but you know, it's great to see that type of experimentation. I will just say, and I hope people realize that Charlottesville, and you know, again, it's metropolitan areas, we have kind of a technological hub around that. We have a number of companies that are solar developers, SunTribe Solar, Apex, here in town. There is some very interesting technologies with Fermata, which does electric vehicle batteries and how that comes and charges in and off the grid. There's a couple other companies, Lumina, that creates a type of switch that helps your solar power like interact with your battery and the grid. So we actually have a very interesting kind of ecosystem here in the state of Charlottesville, and LEAP is on the, kind of the outside kind of, to a certain extent, looking in, and we collaborate where we can, but, you know, it's fun to be part of the system, and in such a kind of an interesting, I think, you know, and they're developing some of those really kind of next generation, or I want to say hopefully not next generation, but, you know, from 5 to 10 years ago, technologies that we will be seeing implemented more at scale.
Does President Biden's current infrastructure plan include any proposals for solar energy?
That is a great question, Rick, and I have not seen his most recent plan, nor dug into it.
Fair enough. I mean, I'm sure it's 999 pages and changing on a regular basis. So I can't expect. I don't know the answer. I didn't ask that with any knowledge that I had, so fair enough.
I was going to say, Leap, right. We're not at a federal level. We're very much Greater Charlottesville and kind of the state of Virginia. So I'm just focused on, you know, kind of what's happening at the state level versus policy and planning and incentives, and also very much here in the city of Charlottesville and County of Albemarle.
You've mentioned Dominion Power multiple times during the hour. Has Dominion Power always been a friend of solar power? Because I think for many people, the stereotype is, I'll use the phrase big energy. Big energy battles renewable energy. So I'm curious about how, if the relationship is has always been positive.
Not as much as my understanding, and I'll just caveat things that, you know, I haven't followed Dominion as closely, you know, until a couple of years ago. But how our power sector here, and you might say energy sector in the state of Virginia, and at least with Dominion, which is the, you know, the big monopoly, and it's a regulated monopoly, right? The function is that they build projects and they get returns on an investment that's guaranteed to them, basically, or maxed out, right? So their incentive is actually to build things because that's how they can generate more profit. That's why you saw, let's say, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is like, if they built that, they would actually get money, you know, and a guaranteed profit on top of that to a certain extent. So now what they, I think they've realized, and you saw this over the last couple of years, and so, you know, they had power plants and whatnot they had built that they wanted to make sure, you know, when coal-fired power plants and whatnot, that they wanted to make sure they got, you know, the most kind of profit out of, right? But what they realized is, okay, hey, there's renewable energy, whether it be solar farms and big scale ones or offshore wind, that can become the next kind of big project that they can make profit on. And so they've shifted their attention to that. Now, you know, within solar, though, there's a lot of people to a certain extent frustrated, and this is a potential kind of challenge for Leap, too, is that Dominion wants to own all those big solar farms, right? And they don't want to necessarily let someone else build a solar farm like a community solar project and let that power onto the grid, too, because then they're not making a profit on that community solar project, for example, right? So that's the kind of the challenge now. And since they've gotten, I would say, rid of their natural gas business, it's much more they're much more interested in solar power or whatnot, but they're also kind of at the same time within that, you might say, type of fuel source, i.e. solar, they want to control as much of it as possible. So they're always positioning themselves and trying to change the laws and the rules of the game to ensure that they kind of control it.
So, Chris, we got just a couple minutes left. Let's finish up by people who have a serious interest in possibly putting solar energy into their own home, solar power, about the subsidies. How do you make that happen? Is it just easily enough to fill out a form, or is it a little more difficult than that?
Let's say there's two main subsidies, at least here in the city of Charlottesville, that you'd want to pay attention to. The biggest one is the income tax credit, the federal government one. And your solar installer, whoever, you know, you choose to select to, you know, put your system on your house, will provide you with a form. And then it's pretty easy enough that either, you know, if you have an accountant that helps you prepare your taxes, you just let them know. It's like, it costs $20,000. They put that in there, and then they're like, you know, 20,000 times 26%. So $5,200 comes off your taxes. That's your income tax credit. Same thing, you just put that in there, you know, you use a online system.
My helper is TurboTax is my accountant.
TurboTax, you know, they should ask you a question. Did you make this energy efficiency improvement? And then you just put it in the amount, and then done. All right?
Okay, obviously, good enough.
Keep your proposal and your receipt for how much you paid for it, you know, just in case you get audited. But that's, you know, that's going to be the biggest amount. In the city of Charlottesville, they'll issue, you have to get a permit. So they know that you've added that and what the value of that system is. You can apply for a property tax credit, basically, so that, because it does, they do count that as increase in value of your house. getting back to a kind of question you asked previously, and is like, does it add value to my house? Well, in the eyes of the city of Charlottesville, it does. They'll increase your property assessment accordingly. But they will credit you, though, because they want you to make this type of investment, I think for 5 to 7 years, one or the other, but that they won't count that actual credit, that value of that system, they won't tax you on it. So that's another one. I mean, that's a couple $100 a year, maybe. But, you know, it is also valuable. At least doesn't penalize you then, you know, in the size of the city for you know, increasing the value of your home and putting that on your house.
Well, I don't know who's been listening for the hour who doesn't want to start Googling Charlottesville, Albemarle, solar panel installers, because Chris Meyer from LEAP sure made it sound like that's a thing to do. You can also go to leap-va.org. Chris, thanks for being a guest on the show.
Rick, I really enjoyed it. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, we will be here again next week, everybody. So make sure to return. Thanks for being here with us every Sunday. Take care.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.